You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
On Tuesday night, the Pacers welcomed to town the Oklahoma City Thunder. In the first half, neither team brought their A-game offensively, and with the score of 52-42 after two, the game could have easily been mistaken for an early 2000s Pacers game. But in the second half, the Pacers' offense came to life as they outscored the Thunder by 14 points in the third quarter. That included 11 of TJ Warren's game-high 23 points. From there, it felt easy. The Pacers extended their lead to 30-plus points at one point as Aaron Holiday continued to show Nate McMillan why making him a starter was the right decision. The UCLA grad scored 17 points on 6 of 7 shooting. Other players of note include Malcolm Brogdon's 20 points and 5 assists, and Domantas Sabonis' 18 points and 16 rebounds with 7 offensive rebounds. On the Thunder, it wasn't a great night for any player. Their leading scorer was Danilo Gallinari with only 14 points. You can't forget the Pacers' bench mob of McConnell, McDermott, Leaf, and the other Holiday. They scored 23 points and helped the Pacers maintain their lead and cruise to a 111-85 victory over the Thunder. This is the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, I'm Adam Friedman, one of the hosts of this show. Now today, we'll be talking about the Pacers' 7th win in the last 8 as they continue to move towards a plus 500 record. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment, including Audible Originals. Audible Originals are stories created exclusively for audio, including documentaries, exclusive Audible books, and scripted shows that you can't hear anywhere else. Audible keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. You'll finish more stories when you listen with Audible and always be a part of the conversation. You can listen to Audible on the Audible app, listen to it anytime, anywhere, on any device, including mobile, Alexa-enabled, Bluetooth, and more. Listen while you're at the gym, listen while you're shopping, in the car, traveling. Anytime you can't read, you listen to Audible. And Audible members get one free audiobook regardless of price and 2 Audible originals fresh from their selection. Members stay motivated and inspired with unlimited access to exclusive guided fitness and meditation programs, and members can sign up for free updates from the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post delivered daily to the app. Audible members can easily exchange any title they don't love at any time. Members keep their library listings forever, even if they cancel. And today, if you go to audible.com/lockedonNBA, you can start a 30-day Audible trial where you can choose 1 audiobook and 2 Audible Originals for absolutely free. That's right. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. audible.com/lockedonNBA. So as always with these podcasts, I do the good, bad, ugly from the Pacers win over the Thunder. So let's get right to it. So we'll start with the good. The first thing that was good is TJ Warren. I think he has to be talked about as a guy who is starting to show why the Pacers basically took him on for free. I mean, that's what happened. They basically paid to take him, I guess is the right way to put it. For the first 4 or 5 games, I mean, he wasn't bad. I think that's discounting his, 18 points games averaging through the first 5. But over the last 6 games, he's really sort of taken that next level and kind of blossomed into a player that Pacers thought he could be. So he's averaging 23.2 points over this stretch. It's a plus 13 on plus minus. It doesn't really mean much, but I think it kind of shows how he's not being a defensive minus at times. Now, it helps he play with more offensive plus players. If you ever read Caitlin Cooper's piece on TJ Warren's defense, it's getting better every game. If you watch him, he's just more engaged defensively than he has been in the past because he's playing for a team that actually, holds you accountable when you're not a good defensive player versus the Suns who didn't give a shit. But anyways, so he's averaging 23 points per game over the last 6 on 63-44 shooting. Now, that is way higher than it's going to be when the season ends, but you're starting to see some of Warren's just unreal ability to score anywhere on the court, one-on-one, whatever, floater, teardrop, layups. He's just, I think over the last, really he shot 50-plus percent in every game except for 1 of the last 6. I mean, we're talking 15 of 18 game, 10 of 14, 9 of 16, 9 of 15. I mean, this is a guy who's just, he's kind of finding his groove in this offense. I think part of it is he's playing with a really good center, Sabonis, who can just set at the screen for him. You have Brogdon, who can really find him cutting to the rim a lot, so he's getting good shots that way. He's finally in an offense that is sort of he's not the centerpiece of it, I don't think it's the right way to put it, but he's definitely playing in flow and they're trying to figure out how to get him the ball. And it's different, right? So he's replacing Bojan, who was sort of the Pacers got Bojan the ball in very similar instances every game, right? It was top of the corner threes. It was maybe kind of slicing a little bit, kind of the way McDermott does towards the rim. But with Warren, because he is so good one-on-one, it's not necessarily about trying to find him outside the three-point line, because he's not a great three-point shooter. I mean, he's been pretty good recently, but he's just not a high-volume, high-percentage three-point shooter. He's more of the kind of guy who who you can kind of lurk around because he's kind of thin and lanky, can kind of cut through people, cut through the lane, cut through defenders. And you can see, you know, they're trying to run kind of off-ball actions to get him the ball. And at times when they just kind of need a guy to go for a bucket, they just sort of feed him to it. So tonight, I mean, that third quarter I thought was just like, this is why they got T.J. Warren, because when it feels like the game is a little closer than it should be and you need somebody to kind of just take it over. And that's the thing the Pacers didn't have last year. They didn't really have more than one, maybe two if you had Bojan and Oladipo playing together, could take over games offensively and just sort of like make a 10-point lead, a 20-point lead, and kind of make it a blowout, right? And Warren did that tonight. I mean, he had 11 points. I think he made 8 straight points with the Pacers at one point, or 8 of 10. He was hitting his teardrop floaters. He had a 3 at one point. I mean, he just, that third quarter was just a clinic for him. He was just like, whoever, I forget who was guarding him, but he couldn't guard him basically is what he decided, and he just went off. And it's, you know, I thought before the season the sneaky Pacer player, T.J. Warren was the one who could make the All-Star game. I thought he was the kind of guy who, we're looking at the Pacers team at the halfway point, if they are, I don't know, I mean, it's a, you can also like 45 games, so let's say they're like 25 and 20 or something where they're like maybe a 5-6, and you deserve an All-Star, right? I thought he would be the sneaky candidate. Now, it's Brogdon, clearly. I mean, Brogdon's putting up an incredible stat line this season so far. I believe he's at like 20-something. So Brogdon's at 20.7 points and 8.5 assists. So clearly right now, Brogdon is kind of the all-star of the Pacers team. But, I mean, Warren and Sabonis are nipping at his heels for sure. And that kind of brings me to my other kind of good of the game. And that was Sabonis, who continues to show why, as a center, he's a better player than as a power forward. Now, I don't know whether he'll be putting up these numbers with Turner. We haven't seen enough of it to really say it works, doesn't work. But he's clearly showing when he's the true center, he's just a good basketball player. I mean, we're talking about the last four games. We're talking about a 17-16 stat line, essentially. You know, he's only shooting 45% from the field, which is low for him. But on the season, he's at about 20 points per game with 13 rebounds. I mean, he's putting up numbers that are like borderline top two center in the East. I mean, we're talking Embiid's the best center in the East, and I guess wherever you put Giannis. I mean, unless I'm missing somebody, I'm going through my list in my head real fast. I mean, DeAndre Jordan, no. I guess you could talk about like Ibaka, but he's probably better than Ibaka and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, I think Sabonis is making a case for being one of the best two or three centers in the East right now. So he's putting up a great stat line. He had an awesome game tonight. He kind of really just didn't shy to Steven Adams. I don't know what's going on with the Thunder, and that's kind of what turns to my ugly first, is, or really my bad, I guess, call it a bad, is that the Thunder, I mean, not that I thought they were going to be good, but this was just like, I don't know, I'm trying to remember if they played last night or whatnot, or 2 nights ago. So they played the Bucks. I'm trying to look when they played the Bucks. I honestly can't see. I got to pull the Thunder schedule. But it was just like a pretty poor showing out of the Thunder. They just sort of lackadaisically came in. They scored like basically at 40 points in the first half, which is not good for an NBA team nowadays. And then they just didn't even make a run in the second half to kind of come back. So I'm thinking they must have played on a back-to-back, is what I'm thinking. They did not. They had a day off between their loss to Milwaukee by 2 points, who, frankly, that's where they played on Sunday when I was recording this last podcast. And Milwaukee's good. And so the fact that they kind of got blown up by the Pacers but barely lost to the Bucks, I mean, I don't know. Maybe this team just had a bad night and whatnot. And because the Pacers only see this team twice, I may just have a bad impression of them all year. But it just, this team felt like, just felt like it was off. Like, just felt like there wasn't something there. And I mean, I guess, you know, Shea usually has 20 points a game. Shea goes Alexander, and he only had like, I think he had 11. He had 11. I mean, this, as a team, they just were just not, they just didn't shoot well. I think they shot like, if I pull it up real fast, I believe they shot like 30% from three, and 35% from the field goal percentage and 24% from three. So they just had a bad shooting night. I don't know if that's kind of the Pacers defense locking in, which kind of goes to my next good, which is the Pacers defense has looked really solid for now 6 quarters, right? So that they were pretty bad against the Magic in the first half. Magic had like 60 points, but the second half against the Magic, they held them like 30-something points. And tonight they held the whole Oklahoma City Thunder like 40 points in each half. We're talking 42 and 43. I mean, the Pacers defense is kind of finally settling in. I mean, this is something that you've noticed every year. The Pacers sort of start off with kind of an iffy defense for the first few games, and then once Dan Burke kind of gets some game, guys get in the game shape, maybe is the right way, maybe they get kind of used to playing with each other, they figure out the right, you know, pieces where guys should be playing and how to kind of accentuate certain players' strengths and whatnot, and that's how they get to where they are today, where I think they're a pretty solid defense. I mean, we'll see going forward. Obviously, they have some tough opponents coming up, and that's where we'll see if the Pacers are really good or not, but it does feel like a little bit that the Pacers kind of defense is kind of coming to shape, and it might still take another 10 or 15 games. When you get Oladipo back, it might take another 10 after that, but it feels like it's coming to shape, and that's kind of where I kind of want to go to my next point, which is sort of a bad anecdote at the same time, right? So the Pacers have really not beat anybody who I consider a playoff team during this run. Maybe the Pistons. I mean, maybe. We're talking maybe the Pistons and maybe the Nets. And the Nets, I don't know if you can count that game. The Nets feel like they just didn't show up. Those are probably the only playoff teams. If you look at the NBA standings just right now real fast, I believe the only team, maybe the Magic are in the standing, or in the, no, they're not. Magic are like one of the worst teams in the league right now. Of the teams Pacers have beat, so technically the Hornets and the Cavs are in the playoffs, but when this all shakes out, it does feel like it's going to probably be the Nets as a 7 seed, and then you can pick your 8 seed out of Detroit. Maybe Atlanta makes a run. I don't know. Magic maybe come back. Whatever. One of those teams, right? The Pacers are one of the 6 teams in the East to have a plus net rating, so I mean that's a good thing going forward. They haven't played anybody good, but also on the same side, they also are down 5 players. You know, I was ready to come on this podcast and scream about the McMillan playing Sabonis and brought us more minutes, but if you look at it, he doesn't really have anybody on the bench to go to. He really had to go to Alize and Bowen, and who was the other two-way guy I'm thinking of they had to go to? Mitra Long. You know, if you, I probably butchered that name, so if I did, you can yell at me all you want, Gus. But they really didn't have the ability to, like, you know, in a blowout win, you just, you know, you go to Sumner and then you go to Goga, stuff like that. They don't have any of those guys. I mean, they're out Sumner, Goga, Lamb, Turner, and Oladipo. That's 5 of their 15 guys in that roster. I mean, that's, I guess you go 17 with the two-way, but still, I mean, that's a lot of people to be down, and yet this team just feels like it's cruising. It feels like they're really no step lost. I mean, some of that credit goes to Jakar Sampson, who's been filling in great at the 4 spot. The Pacers, you know, hasn't been this world-beating score or not, but he's been playing solid defense and just been a guy out there who is, like, just putting up quality minutes. I mean, he's got 11 PR right now, which, honestly, I don't know what PR means, so I don't know why I said that stat. No, but he's just been solid. I mean, we're not talking, he had a 14-10-point game against Detroit and Washington, but he's just been out there providing just a nice little spark for the Pacers and stuff like that. You know, Aaron Holiday, I've been already stepping in as a starter. I mean, I haven't talked about it yet. Aaron Holiday stepping in as a starter has been incredible for this team. It's kind of my other good, I guess, is that Aaron Holiday, since he started becoming a starter, has an 18-6 and 11-17-point game. But more importantly, he's starting to shoot 52-45 on 4.5 threes per game. He's starting to sort of make that argument for that he should be in the rotation, and I think the way McConnell's playing, it's starting to look like that it should be McConnell, Holiday, and McDermott, and McConnell just kind of feeding guys around him, kind of playing the all-knowing distributor, because McConnell's another one who, he didn't have a great game tonight, but he's just been solid. I mean, he's sort of, I don't know whether it's because he was sort of almost out of the league and barely in, he's kind of fighting for his life in the league. You know, he is, how tall is he? He's listed as 6'1", I don't believe that for a second, but he's sort of one of those guys fighting for his spot in the league, and so you kind of see that, and he's bringing a lot of energy, and he's making some good plays. I mean, he's finding McDermott at time when he needs to. He's at 6.2 points and 4.5 assists, which the assist would be his second career high, and that would be, you know, his shooting percentage is at 48%. I mean, he's an efficient player on the court right now. I mean, there's just no reason not to play him now. The question when Sumner comes back, what happens, and so on, but Sumner's out for a while, so we shouldn't really worry about that. But it does feel like when Lamb comes back, who I think is closer to coming back than any of, really maybe Turner's closer, maybe the other close one, but it feels like Lamb and Turner are going to be the next to come back, and then maybe Oladipo, and then Sumner, and then, well, Goga, I guess we'll find out too. I don't, concussions are always hard to figure out, so it does feel like the group is sort of like maybe Goga, Turner, and Lamb are going to come back soon, and then, you know, at some point you'll get Oladipo, and then you'll get Sumner and so on. You know, I think they're targeting, so they said it looks like they're targeting Sumner for like late November and Oladipo for December, but I don't think those are so up in the air right now. Nobody has any idea. You know, Turner's been week to week for about 2 weeks now. Lamb go off day to day, so we'll see what kind of how this shakes out, but it does feel like at least if Turner and Lamb return, you can pretty much slot them in and still keep most of your guys. Jakar's go back to the bench. Maybe Jakar loses some minutes, but that's fine. I mean, he knows what, he's not really like expecting to be kind of this like go-to starter or whatever. And then I think when you bring Goga back, you decide to play Goga relief. That's kind of the decision, but then you pretty much play everybody else the same. You know, I think you go 10 or 11 deep, but it'll be interesting what this team has to do, because they do feel like they've got an excessive amount of talent now that people are playing well. And So it's like, well, what are you doing when everybody returns? Now, the other side of this is, even when Lamb and Turner and Oladipo return, maybe because of, you know, injury history, maybe you do a little bit of, I guess you don't call it load management, because maybe you play the guys, but maybe you do say, hey, Turner, you're only going to play 20 minutes tonight or whatever, and you try to, you know, and figure that out to kind of, because it does feel like Turner, you know, last year he was relatively healthy, and he had a an ankle injury, but Turner seems like he gets hurt, misses 10 games or so every year, and so maybe you can ease his minutes back a little bit and whatnot. At some point, though, right, you have to kind of play your starters to win games, but against these games like the Thunder, maybe you can kind of decide, okay, well, we're not going to ride, you know, we're going to play only Brogdon 25 minutes, for example. I mean, that was something they decided to do. I mean, I think Brogdon's minutes have to come down for sure for this to be sustainable long-term for Matt Brogdon. And he's, you know, I think he's at like 35 minutes per game or something crazy like that, 33 right now after tonight. But they got to kind of come down on those a little bit, I think, just for that to be sustainable. But overall, like I said, it at this point, it's like they have a plethora of talent, and it's a bad problem to have. I mean, like, they have four guys averaging over 17 points per game, and not one of those guys is named Oladipo. You know, you have five guys averaging over 15 points per game. It's a bad problem to have. They'll have to figure it out, but at the end of the day, this is a bad problem to have, and we really shouldn't worry about it. All right, so other good, bad, and ugly. I think the ugliest thing tonight, and this is really just because he just had a bad night, was Justin Holiday. So Holiday's stat line was 0 of 6, 0 of 4 from 3 for 3 points. Now, he had a plus night, 6 rebounds. He was a plus on the court. Granted, that helps it when you play with just, I mean, as a whole, the starters were like a combined plus 25 or something crazy like that. So it helped the placement from the starters, and obviously McDermott and Connell were both plus players. But he doesn't have a good night. You know, Holiday, I think, is sort of kind of pushing to that point of like, he's a player who can come in and play when a guy's hurt and is helpful that way, but it probably just isn't a consistent enough player to be like your day in, day out. I mean, we're talking about a guy who had like 5 points against Orlando, and then he had 16, and then he had 3 and 5. Like, you know, I see the value right now. I mean, you have to play him, like we talked about before. You have to play him because you're down so many guys. But when guys return, it feels like he's probably going to slot back into kind of a outside the rotation role. One, he feels like he can accept that role because he's used to it, and he's, you know, I mean, he didn't sign here with any connotation that he's going to play big minutes. Same way McConnell did. I think McConnell's sort of proven, though, he's kind of the best guard on the bench, like in terms of point guard. I think Holiday, in some recommend a case of being the best guard off the bench when someone returns, but point guard pure, just I'm going to pass the ball and distribute to guys and try to figure out how to set up McDermott, for example. McConnell and McDermott have something going on that's just like you can't put a value on them. It feels like, I mean, I'm sure you could find a number for it, but it feels like there's just some chemistry there that just no other two guys on the bench have. But I feel like that's kind of how he's going to slot back to kind of maybe the 12th role. But, you know, he'll get chances because, one, well, he was going to play when he returns, not going to play every night. Clearly, Lamb is, like, up and down healthy all year. And I think, honestly, right now, the way they're doing it, they're like, we're going to hold out Lamb because let's give him 100% healthy because we're kind of rolling. You know, the thing with the Pacers is they're deep, and I don't imagine because of injury history of Sabonis will miss a game or two, and so will Turner, and Oladipo's going to play less, and Lamb, and I imagine Brogdon will miss some stretches at some point because that's the way it is. They have enough depth that they're going to be able to kind of take that burden, which will be nice because I think that's something we haven't seen in the Pacers team. You know, last year, now granted, this team probably isn't, you know, as this 10 guys that play tonight probably aren't going to win a playoff series, but they probably would win a playoff game against the Celtics because they're too scrappy and they're too, like, try hard in a way where they would win a game against the Celtics, where it felt like last year when they went down Oladipo, they just weren't very deep. They were, you know, they didn't have the depth they have right now, and they couldn't find enough off the bench to score points, stuff like that. And it doesn't seem like a problem right now for the Pacers. It just feels like things have sort of changed in their head after a year. Another good I like to say is it feels like finally, you know, I was really, really worried that there, and I don't know if it's players or coaching, but I was worried that McMillan didn't have the offensive creativity to help the Pacers when they had extra talented offensive players, right? So the Pacers have some real talent offensively. I mean, from Warren to Lamb to Brogdon to Oladipo returns to Holiday. I mean, legitimately in the starting lineup tonight, when you have those four guys playing and they're all kind of where they are, they have four very talented offensive players who have different skill sets, right? So you have Sabonis, who is really more like feed him in the post, but also can do pick and rolls and can really use him as a screener off ball or on ball. You got Warren, who just give him the ball and let him ISO, maybe set a screen for him occasionally. Brogdon, who is just like inefficient, will just and can kind of get to the lane without needing a ton of help and can really play off players really well. And Holiday's a good spot up shooter. And then off the bench too, he's kind of figured how to get McConnell and McDermott to work together. All of that is to say it feels like there's, and I don't know, I mean, the right word is offensive flow. It feels like there is some understanding of, like, when McConnell's on the floor, McDermott's in there, we're going to try to feed the ball McDermott, we're going to set a lot of screens off the ball, and we're going to move McDermott around to get him open. You know, when Brogdon has the ball in his hands, we're either going to set a screen up top with Sabonis, while at the same time running action with Warren to get him open in the lane or whatever it is, to draw defenders in, and then, you know, we're going to really work on the kind of hockey assist pass. You know, you had Sabonis had one of those to Aaron Holiday today. Just things that, like, weren't there last year. But last year it felt like it was a lot of, like, we've got Thaddeus Young shooting a three in the corner and we're screwed, or, oh, crap, you know, it's just Bojan trying to ISO a guy out and score, or it's Corey Joseph running around like a nut and shooting a fadeback 18-footer. Like, it feels like this year and it might just be the talent is better, which is fair offensively, that they're figuring out how to play the offensive strengths of their guys, and they're running plays that accentuate those strengths. You know, I always knew defensively the Pacers could do it, you know, and that's why this has been so encouraging, because they're starting to figure out their defense. And, you know, I never worry about the Pacers kind of figuring out how to play defense, because Dan Berg is such a good defensive coach. He's been the Pacers defensive coach for 20-plus years now, and every iteration of a Pacers team has been good at defense. I mean, we're talking the 2000 team is good at defense, 2010 teams were good, early 2010, the 2017 team was good. Like, all these teams are good at defense. That's just like a staple of the Pacers organization, is being a good defensive team. But I don't think they've ever had the offensive talent they have right now. And, the thought was you're sacrificing some of that defense because you're going to have less talented defensive players for a more talented offense. But I really thought, as long as you brought in guys who are talented, which if you're talented offense, it means you probably have some skill that's a control of the defense, they're going to figure it out, because defensively, they just do. They just figure it out. That's how it works. I mean, if I pull up right now, I believe they're probably now they're number 10 in defensive rating, number 7 in offensive rating. Now, again, look at the opponents. Take a step back. We'll wait till after Houston, after Milwaukee, before we start taking this team to the next level. But still, they're figuring it out, and beating the bad teams is important. That's how you get to 45 to 50 wins to be a 4 or 5 seed. You got to beat all the bad teams and upset a few of the good teams. So, and they're not even fully healthy. So that's, again, I keep repeating that, but they're not even fully healthy. But anyways, the thing I like to see right now is, offensively, there just seems to be some flow and some understanding of, you know, we need a bucket, we'll go to Warren here, we'll set a pick for him, we can run this action, now. Could Brogdon shoot a little better? Of course. Could you figure out how to, you know, Sabonis to maybe shoot some threes and start becoming a threat out there? Sure. But overall, it feels like right now this team is being very well coached on both ends of the floor, which I think comes as a surprise to me, just because I wasn't sure McMillan had it in him. We'll see. We're only 11 games in, but I think I'm at least shocked and kind of happy, I guess, by that. I think I'm pretty much out of good and bad in the ugly. The only thing left I have to say is that, so the Pacers don't play again until Friday, and they play the Rockets on Friday, and then they play the Bucks on Sunday. So for tomorrow's podcast, I believe I'm going to be doing a mailbag/ kind of topic, whatever I choose, podcast. I will send out a tweet from our Locked On Pacers account to send in some questions. But yeah, if you're listening to this podcast right now, feel free to tweet at Locked On Pacers some questions you got through 11 games, you know, how we're feeling. You can give me thoughts. I don't know anything. Just tweet at us, and I'll kind of just go off that for the show. That's all for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow me on Twitter for Madam5 or podcast at Locked On Pacers. As always, we bring you 5 podcasts a week, so look forward to that one tomorrow. I said maybe a mailbag, and Friday, Tony will have a preview of the Houston Rockets, and we'll see you guys again then.